Genesis chapter 22 this morning. Genesis chapter 22. I'd like to read the first 19 verses of Genesis 22. Begins out with the same words as Genesis 15, verse 1. And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham and said unto him, Abraham. And he said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. And Abraham rose up early in the morning and saddled his ass and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son and cleaved the wood for the burnt offering and rose up and went unto the place of which God had told him. Then on the third day Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, Abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together. And Isaac spake unto Abraham his father and said, My father. And he said, Here am I, my son. He said, Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? And Abraham said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went both of them together. They came to the place which God had told him of, and Abraham built an altar there, and laid the wood in order, and bound Isaac his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand, and took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of the Lord called unto him out of heaven, and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram, caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram, and offered him up for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. And Abraham called the name of the place Jehovah Jireh, as it is said to this day, In the mount of the Lord it shall be seen. And the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of heaven the second time, and said, By myself have I sworn, saith the Lord, for because thou hast done this thing, and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice. So Abraham returned unto his young men, and they rose up and went together to Beersheba. And Abraham dwelt at Beersheba. We've been thinking about Abraham in three phases, if you will, of his life that demonstrate to us the various ideas surrounding what it means to walk a life of faith. What does it mean to believe God and to walk a life of faith? And the first time we had this, we discussed the fact that the very first thing that Abraham was called to do was to come out, to go out, to leave where he was and go to a place that God had called him to. And the very first aspect, as we mentioned, the very first aspect of the life of faith is to be separated from and unto God. It is a life that is set apart to God, to follow Him, to obey Him from whatever it was in the past. We mentioned the three things that Abraham specifically was called to come out from, and that was his country, his kindred, and his father's house. And we made the application that the country might suggest the environment in which we live. And you know, we live in an environment that is not conducive to the worship of God. And we are called to come out of that environment. The second thing was the kindred. And we looked at that and made the application that that could refer to the culture in which we live. Not only the environment, But the very culture, the way people act and the way people think, the way people behave themselves, the way people are trained to walk, we are called to come out of that and walk in a distinctly different way. And of course, the family, of course, that's the most difficult one of all, isn't it? Where we put God first in spite of everything, including our families. And I think I mentioned it, and if I didn't, I want to mention it. I was fortunate enough to come up with a family that was a very strong Christian family, and many of us, you know, we would like to emulate our fathers and our family in the walk of the Christian life. But there are times when even our family, and there are families that I've known that have been a hindrance to the walk of the Christian, and when that happens, then we must follow God and leave even family behind. But that was the first aspect, and there are two or three or four stories, if you will, incidents, I should say. I don't like to call them stories simply because stories might have the idea of not being true, and they're not Bible stories, they're incidents, they're historical incidents that Abraham went through between chapter 12 and chapter 14 that illustrate that particular idea. The last incident in chapter 14, we have this man who was separated unto God, living in Hebron, and he's above the fray, if you will, of the world that below him, which was involved in a big five kings against four kings war. And when Sodom was invaded and his brother, as it says in chapter 14, but his nephew actually was called, who was overcome in the fray and was carried away captive, it was the separated man who could be victorious over Sodom. And when he was victorious over Sodom, in fact, the king of Sodom came to him with a generous offer of earthly wealth, and he was able to hold up his hand and say, "No, I choose not. I have lifted up my hand to the God of heaven, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth, and therefore I need to take nothing from you. I can walk in dependence upon God." There is the victory of the separated man. Upon that, we have this phrase, after these things, in chapter 15. And obviously, what happens now is that Abraham, the Lord reveals to Abraham himself in a new way. He said, "I am thy shield and thine exceeding great reward." Not only was God his defender, he was his rewarder. Now the text changes. And Abraham asks the question, what about the son? What about the seed? What about the land? And that's the essence of chapter 15. And written in chapter 15 is that great verse, "Abraham believed God, and it was counted unto him for righteousness." Now, in fact, what has happened now is we are going to discover in the next number of chapters the fact of a man who is going to rely on the promises of God and needs nothing else but reliance upon the promise. Now, did he fail? Yes, and just as we fail. But in the overall thrust of that passage is the man who walks by faith is the man who relies on the promises of God about the future. And he will, and in Abraham's case, and in our case as well, the promises of God will come true, and we can rely upon the promises of God. Now we come to the third section, and we have this phrase again in chapter 22, verse 1, "And it came to pass after these things." Well, after what things? Well, I think we go back to chapter 21 to discover that, and there's three things in chapter 21 that sort of summarize that passage. The first is we have the birth and the weaning of the child of promise, Isaac. The second thing we have in chapter 21 is the putting away of Ishmael, the child of the flesh. And the third thing we have is the planting of a tamarisk tree by the well of the oath and calling upon God, the everlasting God, the God whose promises are forever, and he will never change. Now we're going to have something new. Now we change that. After these things, we want to look at the next phase of Abraham's life. And I'd like to call this the maturity of faith. Now, there's so many different lessons in chapter 22. It's one of the great chapters of the scriptures. But here we have this promise, this revelation of God to Abraham as Jehovah Jireh, in the mount of the Lord it shall be seen. Now, what we're going to have here in this chapter is a great test of Abraham. And I'd like to look at it in two or three different ways. The very first thing I have in my thinking this morning is the test of love. Now, interestingly, you've probably heard this before, but it is still true whether you've heard it before or not. And that is, this is the very first time that the word love is in our Bibles. And it is used here in this chapter very significantly. It says, after these things, God did test Abraham and said unto him, behold, Abraham, behold, here I am. And God said, take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee up into the land of Moriah. It is going to be a test of Abraham's love. This son, whom he loved, all fathers love their sons. That goes without saying. But this love of Abraham to this son was so great because this son was absolutely unique in Abraham's life. This son was unique in his birth. He was the son of promise. He was the son of his old age. It was the miracle son. And thus, Abraham had a unique relationship with this son. This son was unique in his future, because it was in Isaac shall thy seed be called. And thus, Abraham's future was secured, if you will. The promises of God to Abraham was secured in this son. And thus, this young man, Isaac, had a very special place in the heart of the father. The question is this: is he willing, or will he, love his son so much that he will disobey God? Or will his love for God be so great that he will be willing to sacrifice his son? That is a tremendous test. Who do we love most? And we've been looking at John 3:16 in the evenings. And God so loved us that he was willing to sacrifice his son. But that's one side of the coin. In this chapter, and the most significant aspect of this chapter, is that Abraham's love for God was greater than his love for his son. And thus he was willing to obey God, even though it meant the sacrifice of his son. What are you willing to give up? Well, maybe I should point the finger at myself. What am I willing to give up that I might be obedient to God? Is there anything in our lives? Is there anything in my life that I would cling to so tightly that I would be willing to disobey God because of my love for whatever that is. It might be a person. It might be a thing. It might be a place. It's different in every one of our lives, but it is the great test of our love for God. You know, John chapter 14, well, let's take a quick look at John chapter 14. Just want to read a few verses in John chapter 14. Let's read at verse 21. He that hath my commandments and keepeth them, he it is that loveth me. And he that loveth me shall be loved of my Father, and I will love him and will manifest myself to him. Judas saith in him, not Iscariot, Lord, how is it that thou wilt manifest thyself to us and not unto the world? Jesus answered and said unto him, if a man love me, he will keep my words, and my Father will love him, and we will come unto him and make our abode with him. He that loveth me not keepeth not my sayings, and the word which he hear is not mine, but the Father's which sent me. John is telling us in those verses, and he says it over again a number of times and in a number of different ways in his first epistle. He will tell us that the test of my love to God is obedience to his word. And it is the mature believer, the one who truly loves his God, who is willing to give up the dearest thing in his life that he might be obedient unto God. The second aspect of this test, and it gels together, very frankly, is the test of obedience. Not only is this the son whom he loved, that he was asked to sacrifice, but he was asked to sacrifice his son. Now, Abraham knew that the sacrificing of human life was pagan at its very source. Why would God require the sacrifice of a son? The sacrifice of an animal is acceptable and had been acceptable. But the sacrifice of a son, why would Abraham be willing to be obedient? What was it that caused him to be able to be obedient to God? I want you to look with me in Hebrews chapter 11. You knew I was going to have to get back there, right? Because that has been our test, if you will, our test chapter as to giving us insights into Abraham. Now, in chapter 11 of Hebrews, in verse 17, it gives us this insight into Abraham's thinking process. Verse 17, by faith Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac, and he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, that in Isaac thy seed shall be called. Accounting, here's the verse, accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence also he received him in a figure. In Abraham's mind, there was the complete confidence in God and in the promise of God that if he were to offer up his son, then God would raise him up again. In other words, Abraham was willing to give up the promise of God to rely on the God of the promise. For only God, and he knew that, only God was able to bring life out of death. Wait a minute. Had God already proven that to him? Sure he had. Was not Isaac's birth life out of death? Then if Isaac's birth was life out of death, cannot he raise up Isaac from this death? He was willing to obey God because he had absolute confidence in who God was and in what God could do. You see, the only way that I will learn to be obedient to God is to realize that God is greater than anything that I have. And if he asks me for anything because he is who he is, the test of obedience is, will I give it to him? Let's go back to the book of John again. John in chapter 14, verse 31. Jesus says to his disciples, "But that the world may know that I love the Father, and as the Father gave me commandment, even so I do. Arise, let us go hence." You know, here's an aspect of the sacrifice of Calvary that we don't always grab. Because I love the Father. And to let the world know that I love the Father, then I am going to do precisely what he commands. But let's look with me in Hebrews again. And chapter 12, where it says in verse 2, "Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God." We go back to the book of John. I'm flipping you back and forth here, but I think it's important that we see this connection. In the book of John, in chapter 17, when the Lord is praying to his Father, he says to him in verse 24, "Father, I will that they also whom thou hast given me be with me where I am, that they may behold my glory which thou hast given me, because you love me before the foundation of the world." There was a love relationship. The Father loved the Son. And his love for the Son was so great that he was going to raise him from the dead after he was obedient to his word. He was going to raise him from the dead and give him glory that was unique and distinct and upon all the other glory of the Lord Jesus Christ up to this point. That is what Philippians chapter 2 is all about. He became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Wherefore God hath highly exalted him and given him a name which is far above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. This love relationship between the Father and the Son. And the Son committed himself to the Father, knowing that the Father would raise him from the dead and put him at his own right hand. And because of that glory, because of that joy that was set before him, the joy and the glory of resurrection, the Son was willing to be obedient to the Father because he loved the Father. And this is illustrated for us here in this chapter. A Father willing to give up the Son willing to go through that article. That in figure, in type, He didn't actually die. We understand that from Genesis 22. But in a figure, he received him again from the dead, is what is told to us in Revelation, or in Hebrews chapter 11. And therefore, he was willing to be obedient to his Father. Now, application. Philippians, here's your application to you and I. Philippians chapter 3. Here's where we make it personal. Philippians chapter 3. Verse 10. That I may know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings, being made conformable unto his death, if by any means I might attain unto the resurrection of the dead. Now, Paul, of course, is not concerned about his resurrection from the dead. He was absolutely confident of that. But you see what it is are we willing to live for him, to know him, to understand the power of his resurrection? Now, if I will understand the power of his resurrection, then I will be understanding of the fellowship of his sufferings, because death comes before resurrection. And until I am willing to suffer with and for Christ, not for sins, we're not talking about that, obviously, because you and I can't suffer for sins, but as I'm willing to endure whatever the suffering is of this life, I will be able to do that if I have grasped the truth of the power of the resurrection. See, because this life is not where we glory. It is in the future we glory. It is in the glorious resurrection. This is where our hope is lied. This is where our hope lies. This is where we need to understand, and if I will grasp that, I will be willing to suffer with and for Christ in this life. I will be willing to give up whatever it is that he wants me to give up and calls upon me to give up. And the first thing we're called upon is to give up our life to him, that he may do with us and through us anything that he desires to do. Are we willing to lay everything aside that we might understand and know the power of his resurrection? Are we willing to put everything on the cross? Are we willing to take up our cross, as Jesus says in another context, and follow him, saying goodbye to all that is in this world, that we might know him and the power of his resurrection? Now, I want you to be very clear. I stand with Paul here. I say this not as though I had already attained. None of us attains that completely, do we? We're all selfish. We all are afraid to totally give ourselves to Christ. Paul is probably the greatest example of the totality of giving himself to Christ. And yet he said he hadn't attained. He wasn't made perfect. But he follows on. If that I may apprehend that for which I am apprehended of Christ, the life of faith, the maturity of faith, rests in our complete giving of ourselves in every aspect of our being to the person of Jesus Christ, who will demonstrate in us His glory and His power. I wanted to go back to the book of Hebrews in chapter 11. I'm always stopped in Hebrews chapter 11 with these words. They have, every time I read them, I just have to stop and my heart just about stops and I get cold, if you will. I'm reading down through and all of these wonderful things that God has accomplished in the lives of these individuals, and I get to 34 and it says this, I'm in the middle of a sentence. Quench the fire, violence of fire, escape the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, wax valiant in fight, turn fight the armies of the enemies, ruin receive their lives to, their dead to raise to life again. And I'm just, wow, look at all these glorious victories. Wow, isn't this tremendous? And I'm getting all excited about all these victories. And then it says, and others.